We begin in Australia in very much the present moment. As you've heard, a hostage situation ends violently in Sydney, Australia, that took the focus of the world media for more than 16 hours. A Lindt chocolate shop in Sydney, where a Muslim gunman claiming to have bombs took hostages, made demands, was involved in negotiations with the authorities, and then police moved in. This from Nine News in Australia.
They look to be at the ready, those, and they're going in as we speak now. And there is gunfire. We can hear all of the heavily armed police going in right now.
Not long after that exchange and the broadcast of those pictures on Australian media, at 2:45 local time, the New South Wales police tweeted, "Sydney siege is over. There have been casualties. There was a bomb sweep to secure the area, and now the people of Australia are left with questions." With us now, Michelle Innes, reporter for our partner, The New York Times, in Sydney. Michelle, thanks for joining us.
No problem.
And let's just take everyone through the sort of ending of this siege. The early morning hours, we're speaking of the negotiations that were taking place, and then all of a sudden, things really began to change. What are you reporting?
Okay, yes. We saw five, possibly six hostages run out of the Lindt Chocolate Cafe, which is at the top of Martin Place in Sydney. And very quickly after they ran out, and without warning, there was sudden live rounds, but definitely very loud noises and flashes of light lighting up the front of the Lindt Cafe. And then police stormed into the building. There was smoke, alarms went off. It was very dramatic and very sudden.
In the course of the negotiations that took place in the early hours of the morning, the identity of the man believed to be the hostage taker became public, and he turned out to be a fairly familiar individual to reporters and others in Australia.
That's right. He is known to police. Police were reluctant to confirm his identity, but he has been named in the local media as Mon Haron Monis, an Iranian who's aged about 50. He has a criminal record for various offences, including one for which involved him aiding or abetting the murder of his former wife. He was also on charges relating to having written poison pen letters to the family of Australian servicemen who died in service overseas.
So it's not really known at this point, even though Australia is, you know, part of the coalition in Afghanistan and Iraq and has been targeted in the war on terror. It's not clear if this incident is purely a criminal matter in Sydney or lives in some sort of netherworld between a crackpot shooting incident and something that actually does involve a conspiracy, a jihadist conspiracy, yes?
That's correct. It's police have not confirmed whether he was just acting alone or whether he's part of a larger network, which in a way he exhibited a black flag with white Arabic script on it, made hostages hold that up to the window very early on in the siege, and this is why police or why media initially thought that he was linked to a terrorist organisation. But that hasn't been confirmed, and in fact, this man's former lawyer has said that he believes he was acting alone, that he was passionate about his causes, and that he was so passionate that he was deluded, in fact.
And indeed, sometime in the last 24 hours, something caused him to crossover from delusions into actual actions here. Describe just how much this pushed the buttons and fears of people in Sydney during the course of your reporting, Michelle.
The city remained relatively calm. I think police dealt with the situation very quickly by shutting down the central business district. The cafe itself in Martin Place, Martin Place is a major pedestrian thoroughfare, and it's the place where the country's central bank, the Reserve Bank of Australia, is located there. Three major banks have big offices in Martin Place. State Parliament's around the corner. The Opera House is within walking distance. So it's a very central part of Sydney. And the cafe itself is somewhere that both locals stop at for their morning coffee or their hot chocolate, and also it's a draw card for tourists. So it's summer here, and we have summer school holidays running at the moment. So it would have been busy. But despite that, police managed to get people out of the area quickly. They managed to evacuate people out of the buildings, even from the floors above the Lindt Cafe. People were seen climbing down ladders. I saw a baby being handed out of a building. The transport system, the train system was shut down, but only temporarily. Traffic on the Sydney Harbour Bridge was shut, but it didn't seem to create chaos. People were patient, they understood what was happening, and the police were able to get on with their job, which was basically around negotiating with this man over the release of those hostages.
And given the scenarios that could have transpired here, this would appear to represent one of the more positive scenarios of the outcome.
Absolutely. Local media are saying two people have been killed, which is a terrible outcome. But on the plus side, if there is one, we did see many, you know, maybe 10 hostages walk out of the building, run out of the building. And although it's been a terrible experience for them, they've come out physically unharmed. There's been no tragic mass casualties. So in that sense, it's you know, been handled efficiently, or as efficiently as it could have been.
Looking once again at the images, this would seem to be unprecedented in Sydney, even if it was relatively on the plus side. I mean, there haven't been these kind of attacks in Australia proper.
No, that's right. I think Australians would have found this shocking today. They would have been very alarmed to turn on their TVs and see that in their sunny city in the middle of summer, when people are thinking about Christmas and their families, their loved ones, to see this happen in the centre of the city would have been shocking. It doesn't happen often. There have been some incidents where police have arrested and charged people. Counter-terrorism operations have taken place. But as far as terrorist attacks on our own soil, they're few and far between. And we also don't have a lot of people with firearms in Australia. So it's unusual for even somebody in our city to be walking around the city with a firearm.
Michelle Innes is a reporter for the New York Times in Sydney, Australia. Thanks so much, Michelle.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Australians may be shocked by the events of today, but they have long been one of the targets of jihadists in the war on terror, even if the attacks have been off Australian soil. We reached out to Peter Jennings, executive director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. He's also a national security expert based in the capital, Canberra.
We've been involved from the start as a close military ally of the United States. We committed forces to the original attack on Afghanistan and also into the invasion of Iraq in 2003. In fact, we're regarded, I think, as one of the closest U.S. allies. So we've really been with the U.S. Every step of the way since the 9/11 disaster.
And that is certainly as a response militarily, but as a target of al-Qaeda and now potentially ISIS. Remind us of the attacks that were specifically targeted at Australians. And I'm thinking of the attack on the Indonesian club, which was very close to September 11th, which mostly killed Australians, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's right. There were two bomb attacks on the Indonesian island of Bali, which is a holiday resort very popular with Australians, in 2002 and 2003. And across those two attacks, 100 Australians were killed. The Australian embassy in Jakarta has also been attacked, and Australians have been killed in other terrorist bombings in Indonesia. Australia has often by name been mentioned in al-Qaeda and more recently in Islamic State propaganda as being one of the countries which in fact should be attacked by supporters of Islamic Jihad. And again, that's been a consistent theme for the last 13 or 14 years.
There's a sense among American citizens that the U.S. is very much involved in the Middle East. We were involved in the Camp David Accords and the peace process and are seen to be the closest ally of Israel. From the perspective of the average Australian citizen, what do Australians believe the connection between Australia historically and the Middle East is or has been?
Well, we've always seen the Middle East as being important to Australian security, and this really goes back to the First and Second World Wars, where Australian forces fought very actively in the Middle East theatre. Partly that is to do with a sense of oil security. Partly that's to do with a sense of Australia as a small state believing it's important to act with responsible states in the international community to protect the interests of countries like Kuwait, for example, after it was invaded by Iraq in 1990. Increasingly, though, if you ask the average Australian, you know, where do our interests intersect in the current fight against terrorism, I think they would say that we see a very direct connection after the deaths of so many Australians in Indonesia a decade ago. And it's important to remember that many of those Indonesian terrorists who were active at that time had military experience in Afghanistan, had received military training from al-Qaeda. And so Australians perceive a very direct connection from the Middle East through to countries in Southeast Asia, which are, of course, our immediate neighbours in this part of the world.
Finally, is there a count, a suspected count of individuals with Australian passports who might be jihadists, who have intersected with ISIS and may be within the borders of Australia at this very moment?
Yes, that figure has been frequently discussed by government and intelligence agencies. It's said that around 60 or 70 Australians have actually gone to fight primarily in Syria. Around 20 of those have been killed during fighting in Syria. And an unspecified number have returned to Australia, with the majority still in country. Beyond that 60, there's also said to be another 100 or so Australians who have been involved in terrorist financing and other forms of support, which has gone to the Islamic State or to other terror groups in the Middle East. But this is the first occasion where it looks as though we've seen an overt terrorist connection to the situation in the Middle East actually taking place in the central business district of Sydney, and that's going to concern Australians mightily who might once have thought that our geography protected us. Now it seems pretty clear that that's no longer the case and that terrorism has the capacity to wash up on our shores just as it can in so many other parts of the world.
Peter Jennings is Executive Director of the Australian Strategic Policy Institute and a national security expert based in Australia. He spoke with us from Canberra. Thanks so much.
That's my pleasure. Thank you.